everyone. Welcome to another episode of Indiana Jones. That's what we're doing today, right? Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. That's the podcast we're doing. It's not Retro Rewatch. We're not rewatching retro TV shows. We're doing an Indiana Jones show.
And we're certainly not doing an episode of Stargate SG-1.
No. So, Indy, how is it going?
It's going great, Marion.
I was kind of thinking, who am I then?
Well, I mean, I was running through several characters, and I'm like, wait, these are all guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's the cool female character? Yes. Oh, yeah, Marion.
Yes. So, of course, we're doing Retro Rewatch. We're doing SG-1. And it is... by the way, I'm Patrice. Just wanted to mention that.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Patrice.
SG-1, Season 3, Episode 21, Crystal Skull. And if you're wondering why we have that connection with Indiana Jones, I mean, one, the title probably kind of gives it away, but two, go watch it first. You will get it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were missing the big boulder that you're running away from, but and all of that, but yeah.
It's, you know, so there was one of the sequels, mm-hmm. to Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it was Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, I guess, mm-hmm. is what they called it. I can't remember.
Yeah, as far as I remember, it was really bad.
It was bad.
That's all I remember.
Yeah, it was bad. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was bad.
So let's see if this is any better than that movie. Should we just jump right into the production notes?
Oh, let's do it.
Let's do it. So March 3rd, 2000 was when this very episode of Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, no, Indiana Daniel Jackson and the Crystal Skull, Daniel Jackson and the Crystal Skull, aired in the United States of America, US, yay, Showtimes. That Showtime was the network. January 17th, 2001 in Germany. So I always like to mention when I probably saw it. I don't know if I... so long ago that I don't remember if I saw it day one, but I think I would assume so because it was one of my favorite shows back then. So I probably couldn't wait.
I did not see it day one.
That I'm not surprised. Otherwise, we would not be sitting here and doing this.
Right, yeah, good point.
We have an IMDb rating that is actually pretty good. It is an 8.0, so we're going up and out of the 7-point area again. So, mm-hmm. good job. We have a story and a teleplay credit this time. So, we get a story credit, Michael Greenberg and Jared Paul. And we have I didn't look up any extra information about them. I don't think there was anything special about them. Probably just submitted... like a story.
They're just Indiana Jones fans, probably.
Yeah, probably. The teleplay credit goes to Brad Wright and Jonathan Glasner. So far, so easy. We have a new director, Brad Turner. He will end up directing 8 episodes of SG-1, 1997. Actually, that means he probably already directed some. I should have checked that out. And he became a executive producer on 24. Remember that show? And won an Emmy for that.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Won an Emmy for that. So, pretty good.
I think he actually did a good job directing this episode.
I think so too. He definitely did a really good job. And I am actually going to look up what the last episode was. Yeah, he's done a couple already. This season, nothing, but he did season 2's episode Touchstone and also the Tok'ra part 1 and 2. See, that name was familiar.
Yeah. Okay.
Should have looked that up, but I didn't. We have a bunch of cool guest stars as well. So, first and most importantly, of course, we have Nicholas Ballard, played by Jan Roops. He is mm-hmm. a Czech-Canadian opera singer and actor from the 1920s to 2009. Best known for playing the Amish patriarch Eli Lapp in Witness, 1985.
Okay.
long time ago.
I mean, I totally recognized him, but yeah. I didn't know from what. Yeah.
He was 79 years old during the filming, and he unfortunately passed away in 2009 after a stroke.
Oh.
Yeah, but I mean, he was 89 at that point, so that happened. We, of course, have more people. We have Jason Schumping.
Oh. Sure, that sounds good.
As Dr. Robert Rothman, he was introduced actually in Forever in a Day as Daniel's former research assistant and returns in this episode. Then we have our favorite doctor, Dr. Fraser. She's back. Terrell Rothery got a promotion. I don't know if you noticed. Got a promotion somewhere before this episode.
No, I didn't notice.
Yeah, she is, I think, a major now.
Wow, okay.
So, good for her.
Go Doc Fraser.
We have, of course, Sergeant Seiler, Dan Shea, regular.
He gets a different line this time.
He gets a different line this time, but he's also still the stunt double of Richard Dean Anderson. Mm-hmm. We have Russell Roberts as psychiatrist. Not a lot of extra information about him, like what he did. We have Jackie Jensen as nurse. We have, of course, Daniel Bacon as technician. Seen him before. I think not a surprise for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
We have also recurring Tracy Westerholm as she was, like, we saw her previously in Foothold. We have Peter Kufluck as technical Sergeant Connor, uncredited this time. And we have Hector Navarro as technical Sergeant Kraushaar. That's a German name. Kraushaar, probably. Also uncredited. So, yeah. Quite a nice collection of actors and so on. I wanted to look up what Russell Roberts did for us. But yeah, this is actually the only credit he gets in this episode. So,
okay.
Not a lot. I have, of course, some interesting tidbits, and once upon a time he was in as Duke. Interesting. And It as Greco, 1990s miniseries It. One episode.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So he is to at least last year still working.
Awesome.
So good for him.
Good for him.
I have a German title, as I mentioned. Der Kristallschädel, the crystal skull. So not very spoilery this time.
Right. Yeah, you shared that with me last time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it is so not spoilery.
So not
the big
spoiler.
Surprise with this one is that they went with the same title, just a yes. direct translation, yes. instead of coming up with a spoiler title.
Yeah, it's really interesting sometimes why usually we get things get spoiled, and then every now and then they're like, nope, this time we're not doing it. So weird.
Yeah, I wonder what's up with that.
Yeah. The outside of the psychiatric hospital were filmed at Jean Matheson Memorial Pavilion. The insides at the British Columbia Children's Hospital. So,
the outside looks familiar. So
we've had that before, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Yep.
And one other important thing, even though Daniel tells his grandfather Nick that he needs to tell him everything and the Stargate Command is looking for powerful allies in their fight with the Goa'uld. They never return to this planet or interact with these aliens ever again on screen. I wanted to mention that because usually if I don't, I mean, I'm spoiling a little bit because, of course, now you know this is not going anywhere. But if I don't mention it here, we will just forget about it.
Well, okay, mentioning it here is totally fine, and I don't feel like you're spoilering for me, yeah. because one of the things I was going to bring up mm-hmm. when we talk about the whole thing at mm-hmm. the end was, I'm afraid they just did an episode where they've done this big setup,
yeah.
and they're never coming back to it yeah. again.
We've had that happen before. I mean, remember the redo?
Yeah. mm-hmm.
Yeah. It happens more often than you think. I mean, also understandable because sometimes you're like, you think you have this cool idea and you start with it and you realize, nah, it's actually stupid and you never continue with it. Or you have a better idea and you just forget about the old one. Like, it's just,
yeah,
just normal. So not every idea turns out to be or like pans out the way you thought it would. All right, should we jump in?
Let's do it.
Yeah, so we start out with very majestic music. There's a pyramid with a stargate up front and kind of a narrow path leading from the stargate to the pyramid. Like, it's really interesting, very cool looking.
I liked this design.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So we go to SGC and they send a help and they're like, wow, that is big. Because the pyramid is supposedly, I don't know how they figured that out from the help, but I guess perspectives or something, over 1,000 meters tall, which is, I don't know, what is that? 1,000 meters should be about 3,000 feet-ish, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, about. Ish. Close enough.
Close enough. So
we're not baking, so it's close enough.
It's close. We're not baking. Yeah, that was a discussion we had before the show. We're not baking. Yes. So that is actually pretty tall. And it says even here, 3,300 feet approximately, which would make it taller than the Burj Khalifa, which is currently the tallest building in the world with 800 something meters. So,
wow, okay.
That is massive. I think at some point later they mentioned even that all the pyramids in that we know of, at least in the world, would just fit easily into that one.
Yeah, I think it's Daniel makes the mm-hmm. comment.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Tilk, Mickey, to the rescue, he knows of no gold structure of that magnitude. Good to know. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
So they send in the melp into the pyramid. The inside, of course, is also massive. I mean, not a surprise. There's like a massive cavern in there. And Carter is very excited about leptons that are being detected there. Where do I start with leptons? Leptons are actually a real thing. They're a type mm-hmm. of subatomic particle. Similar particles like electrons and positrons and neutrinos and whatever exist. So it's like it is a real thing. The thing she mentions about neutrinos later, they really do pass through everything, no matter how dense. And sunlight is very rich in neutrinos, and estimated that 65 million solar neutrinos pass through 1 square centimeter every second. So you're basically being bombarded by 65 million. No, by 65 times, I don't know how many square centimeters your body's surface has, but probably a lot, every second.
Yeah, so it's a metric buttload going through your body every second. It's
literally a metric buttload. So Carter is really excited about those leptons because she says that means that in something inside this pyramid is slowing down neutrinos. And she explains that, like, she says 500 million billion passed through you. Yeah, probably could be if you do the math. A lot, a buttload, as you said. Daniel has seen something and he's like, what is that? And they're like, oh, we can't go with the mouth there, it's too narrow. So they do the zoom and enhance thing.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Which clearly uses the same technology that let them know that the pyramid was 1,000 meters tall.
Probably. So it turns out, once the enhanced part has happened, it's a crystal skull. And I found a little comment here that in real life, the crystal skulls discovered in Latin America have been found to be hoaxes. That mm-hmm. includes the one found in the 1920s in Belize, the same location as the one that Daniel Jackson's grandfather discovered. So they do it. They're a real thing, but they're completely fake. And they're definitely not alien or even from that pastime era. They're just things people created later.
Yeah. There's a scene where they talk about time frames for mm-hmm. the skulls. And anyhow, but that's coming up.
That is coming up. So, well, it turns out that is interesting to Daniel because he says it's exactly like the one found in 1971 in Belize, not in 1921, by his grandfather. Dun, dun, dun.
Hmm.
So one, he has a grandfather. Two, he found a crystal skull. that is the teaser. So, what were you thinking when you saw this?
I was thinking we are absolutely doing Indiana Jones movie. We have to go and recover the artifact.
Yes,
and it will have some other powers. And mm-hmm. But then when we get to the end of this, found by my grandfather, then I'm like, okay, we're bringing in Daniel's grandfather into the episode.
Yes, we were. And I mean, I'm just looking at your predictions real quick. You said in the Indiana Jones episode, and the skull is a real thing and will have another use.
Nailed it.
We'll get to that in a second. But so, I mean, even the another use we haven't seen yet, but we'll get to that in a second. So,
yes. Yeah, it's coming up real fast.
Yes. So that is that. So back to our favorite room, because of course, now that we've discovered this, we need exposition.
Oh, right. Yep. We went to the exposition room and not correct. Right to the gate room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Daniel, with the help of Clippy, probably has created a PowerPoint presentation of crystal skulls. None of them and all of them fake. The one in Belize, he says, is unique. Because it was made, he says it here. Yeah. The great explorer, the not so great grandfather, Nicholas Ballard. He preferred being called Nick, even when I was a kid. It was, anyway, the point is, no one can explain how the skull that Nick discovered was carved from a single piece of crystal against the grain, given the technology of the day. He claimed it possessed a certain power. How intriguing.
Right. And then he talks about how it's a power... Yeah. To teleport you to aliens.
Yeah, to see aliens.
But no one believed him.
No one believed him. He also could never reproduce it. So, like, he had that one experience, and then he could never, ever reproduce it again. So, the academic community didn't believe him. And Carter points out, and she's right, the academic community didn't believe your theory that the pyramids were landing sites for alien spaceships either. So, maybe...
So, it runs in the family.
One, it runs in a family, but maybe it also runs in a family that they're right.
Could okay, be. Yep, fair.
Could that be? And for some inexplicable reason, probably plot reasons, Jack is like, we have to see this. Maybe he's a fan of Indiana Jones. Who knows?
Could be. I mean, yeah. I would expect that to be a Daniel or a Sam line. Not mm-hmm. a Jack line, but
yeah, but for some okay. reason, he's super excited about it.
My guess is it has yeah. to do with contracts and minimum number of lines per episode.
It could be. I mean, he has a bunch of lines, so I don't know, but
he does.
Who knows? Maybe he has in his contract a high number of lines that he has to have. You never know.
Wouldn't surprise me.
So, Fraser has some issues with the radiation there. Jack says, hey. If you'd been listening, you'd know that Nintendo's passed through everything. Because I think Daniel said something about, oh, couldn't we just wear like a protective suit of some sort?
Right.
The Nintendo's.
For at least the first half of this episode,
mm-hmm.
Jack has some of the best yes. lines and yes. and scenes.
Yes. He does. So, yeah, with that, I think we have to go, right? So, we go. We go into the massive pyramid. There's a really nice, scene where we see them walk in. Carter mentions that the muon radiation is increasing, but it's nothing concerning yet. And it's big. And the path to the skull is tiny. This was, by the way, also done in front of a green screen. If you didn't notice, that's kind of obvious.
Oh, it was so obvious. I mean, there's so much about this episode where it's like bad special effects. But it's okay because, you know, it's... It's a product of its time. They were bad effects for back then, too.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I mean, they also didn't have the big budget like whatever Mission Impossible or something where you could have good effects.
Yeah. One of my favorite effects that they do multiple times in this episode, typically with Teal'c, running while on the narrow path.
Yeah.
And it's so clear. He's just standing in place, running in place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's also more than once where his head basically passes through like a rock or something.
Oh my God, I missed that.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's one thing with props in here that I forgot I was going to go and look at again after the episode. The prop that Sam uses as her radiation detector, excuse me.
Oh yeah.
It looks like it's like some off the shelf construction calculator thing that you go to like Home Depot to pick up.
Yeah, or it's maybe some, you know, some what is it, stud detector or something?
Or a stud detector. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
probably. And and I was going to go back and like freeze frame on it so I could look at it and see if I could figure out what it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a radiation detector, I am almost 100% certain she is not holding a radiation detector in her hand. It's something else that they're calling it that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to be fair, do we even have radiation detectors that can do that? I don't know.
Probably not.
Yeah. Probably.
Or maybe. It doesn't matter. All that matters is that we're on an Indiana Jones adventure.
Yeah, Indy, save us. No, I don't know. Different story. I'm actually seeing if I can find the screen grab of that the detector, to be fair. So Teal'c says, oh, whoever the builders are, they appear to be a formidable race. And this is where Daniel mentions you could fit every pyramid on Earth inside this thing and still have room to spare. And Jack is all like always practical. He's like, can you imagine heating this place?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they walk to the platform over the narrow pathway thingy, and there is a pink crystal skull on a pedestal of some sort. And Daniel approaches it, and Teal'c is a couple steps behind him. Carter is, of course, completely excited and geeking out about the physics, and she's, if I can get these materials, and that would like change everything, and all of that. And Daniel is kind of looking at the skull and talking to himself, so it's kind of everybody's doing their own thing. And then Daniel stares into the eyes, and the whole thing starts to glow, and you see, like, I don't know, it's kind of a nice effect, like a... It looks like, I don't know, a particle... Beams, particles around the skull, like a field, particle field of some sort. Carter notices that the radiation is starting to spike, which is a concern. So Jack decides, okay, we're out of here. This is getting dangerous. And all of a sudden, there's a field around the skull, and Teal'c decides, well, you know what's a good idea? Let's zap this thing, because this I don't like.
Because Daniel's nose is about 3 inches from the skull and not moving.
Yes. So he zaps it, and Daniel gets thrown backwards. And Teal'c just walks through Daniel because all of a sudden he's gone. For the rest of the team, Daniel has disappeared. But there's no time to really investigate that. The radiation is skyrocketing. Carter actually falls unconscious. She's like, shit. So Jack decides, okay, we should really leave and, like, they get to safety because this is getting really dangerous.
Yep. So they bail.
Mm-hmm. So they run back, run to the Stargate. I think, is this the... No, this is later. Never mind. So they run back, come through the gate, minus Daniel, and then they just all fall down. So they're all basically out. They made it back, yeah. And that was as far as they could get.
Right. So this is where we get some this next scene, I mm-hmm. believe. That's when we go to the infirmary, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's where we get some great Jack scene action happening.
Almost. We get there's. I think I know what you're referring to, and it's split into two parts.
Oh, of course it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Jack. First, we start with the infirmary. Frasier's, of course, there. Jack is waking up. Teal'c is conscious already. Jack is hot. That's what we learn.
Mm-hmm.
And Frasier says, yeah, I know. We're trying to keep your temperature down. The muon radiation affected your hypothalamus. And she pats him down with a damp glove. And she's like, essentially, your internal thermostat went haywire. Your respiratory heartbeat and your temperature have been fluctuating wildly. So basically, all three of them almost died. Not so good.
Yeah, that's pretty serious.
That's pretty serious. And Teal'c does report what happened, like what they did, and that Daniel just disappeared. And we cut to the planet, and Daniel is still lying unconscious on the platform. So he's not dead. Oh, well, right. we don't know if he's dead, but he's at least still lying there. So he might be dead. Who knows? So they sent, we go to the command center, the gate command room, whatever it's called. They're using a MALP to find Daniel, but there's no signs. There's a lot of radiation, though. So they're like, I don't know what happened, yep, but Daniel isn't there.
Still really high.
Yeah, which is weird, because we just saw Daniel lying on the platform, but now the MALP is saying there's nobody. And Teal'c pitches that he should go and collect the skull, because they probably want to know more about it, and maybe what was teleported, whatever. And Hammond is not so sure, and he's like, well, I mean, look, I'm more protected than everybody else against radiation, so I can do a quick in and out, like run in, pick it up, run back. And that seems to convince Hammond, and he's like, yeah, okay, probably a good idea. So,
yeah,
we get this scene, I think that you mentioned before. Teal'c runs in, starts packing up the skull. By the way, if you pay attention, didn't fit the box.
No, I noticed that. but Christopher Judge did not let that stop him from getting through the scene.
Yeah, and in later scenes, you see that they fixed that.
mm-hmm.
But apparently this scene, they hadn't really done a good job. Maybe it was one of the early takes. So Daniel wakes up and he asks Teal'c what happened, but Teal'c doesn't seem to see or hear him, which is bad. And then, to add insult to injury, Teal'c just runs through Daniel. Like, straight through him. And Daniel follows him. And before leaving the cavern, Teal'c kind of stops and looks around. By the way, the box at this point is closed properly.
Yeah, also, Daniel, for no reason whatsoever, has taken all of the gear that he's carrying with him and mm-hmm. just thrown it off the ledge.
Yeah. For no reason whatsoever. So Teal'c and Daniel come through the gate. Daniel barely, like the gate basically closes right after him.
Yeah, if he was any slower, we could have had a replay of...
No, this time he would have died.
The second episode of Stargate SG-1 where Jack holds, Kaczynski?
Yeah.
In the gate and has the top of his head chopped off.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, I don't know because he's out of phase, so who knows? But probably because he still got transported. Teal'c reports no sign of Daniel Jackson. Well, this confirms it. And Daniel notices that he can put his hand through everyone. I have a major physics problem with this whole thing.
So there's an episode of Next Generation where
I remember that.
The same thing happens, I have the same physics problem.
Yeah,
and, so in that one,
he can run through doors, but not and walls, but not fall through the like the floor. All of that, like
Right, and and there's one scene where someone's sitting in a chair. And they shouldn't be able to. And
Of that, exactly. So yes, physics, I think we can forget at this point. Maybe it's dependent on his will. If he wants to lean against something, he wants to sit on something, he can. But otherwise, he can just walk through it. I don't know. But then why is he not just like willing himself to stop Tilk from running through him or something?
Right, and if it's a will thing, why not will yourself to pick up a pencil
or pen, write something,
and write notes to people?
Yeah. So, physics be damned for reasons of plot.
I want to point out that the problem we're having here is with Daniel being able to selectively have objects solid for him.
Yeah.
So a physics issue, and not the fact that that we have a story where they go through a metal circle to a different part of the galaxy, pick up a magical glass skull, and bring it back.
Oh, that's so true. In a magic room that has a slower neutrino or something, a lepton.
Right.
Yes. Yes, but instead, I noted it down specifically at this point because I was like, so far, okay, but now we're getting to weird territory. So we go back to the infirmary, and now we get the second part, and I think that's the one that
this is the part that I was remembering, yes.
Yes. So we learn from Fraser that Carter will also be fine. She says, like, if he had stayed a little longer, I think it would have ended pretty badly, but they made it out just in time. Jack is being very annoying.
Because he's Jack.
Because he's Jack, but Fraser is like Fraser, and she's the doctor, and she says, you have to stay in bed, doctor's orders. To which Jack mutters, what did he say? Napoleonic power monger.
Napoleonic power monger.
And I'm like, okay, that's funny. They start talking, and Tilk believes this skull is a teleportation device. So it's just a matter of figuring out where was Daniel teleported to. And we learned that Rothman is researching the skull, which Jack doesn't have a lot of confidence in. I think he says something he couldn't figure out, like an ashtray.
He couldn't analyze an ashtray.
Something like that. And then we get that scene that you probably refer to, because Jack wants to get up. And Tilk is like, being the sensible one, he's like, Dr. Fraser believes you're not strong enough to undertake such a mission. And O'Neill's like, whatever. You know, typical male. Being like, don't listen to the doctors, I know better. So he tries to get up and basically just falls flat, like on his face on the floor.
And the way that whole thing plays out is really funny. Yeah. Yes.
And then Tilk is like doesn't even flinch, doesn't even move. He's like, Dr. Fraser is usually correct in such matters. And then he bends down, picks Jack up, and just dumps him on the bed. Not even properly, just drops him on there.
It's like he grabs the back of Jack's shirt, it's a suitcase
pulls
handle.
Him up,
and just him drops bed. Him face first on the bed, and Jack's like, thanks.
Exactly. So funny. Yeah. And it's like he's not even trying to put him properly on it. Like, he's still half hanging off of it, and he's like, that's your problem now. You can do it yourself.
Honestly, this is pretty much my favorite scene in the whole episode.
Probably, yeah. There's I think one other that's really funny, but yes. So we go to the lab, and Daniel is trying to tell Rothman things, and Rothman is being completely useless. He's also not hearing Daniel, so that doesn't help. But he's also useless when it comes as a scientist.
But I'm having a problem with this.
Okay.
And we've established this was Daniel's research assistant.
Yeah, apparently not a very good one.
Well, but Daniel recommended him as a replacement on SG-1.
Yes.
Which implies that he's very competent. Otherwise, Daniel wouldn't have recommended him.
Maybe not, so, not for this.
Yeah, but I know it doesn't work for this story.
Yes.
So this is how it has to be.
Yes.
But yeah, I just had a problem with this because it was like, this guy, the character's being played as incompetent, but he can't be based on our previous experiences.
I mean, to be fair, Daniel isn't also isn't very competent a lot of times.
Okay, fair. Yeah. Daniel thinks with his heart more than his head.
Yes, or other body parts.
that too.
So, but they agree it's probably some sort of teleportation device, and Rathman should keep digging, and they will check back in 12 hours. That's what we hear.
Yeah. I do like that he's, when he is so resistant to seeing this as anything other than an inert crystal carved into a skull, where Hammond goes, humor me.
I'm your freaking boss, so just do it. Yes. We go to Teal'c's room, and Teal'c is meditating, and Daniel is trying to communicate with him. I think that is a smart idea to say, hey, I mean, people can't see and hear me, but maybe when they're meditating, especially like Daniel, like Teal'c and Kalnari, maybe they can do something. Who knows? So he tries it, and it kind of seems to work, but not the way he wanted. Teal'c does notice someone present. Like, he notices something, and he's not sure what it is, but he's like, something. So he steps outside, there's nobody in the hallway, and he still can't see anybody, and Daniel tries, and he's like, and then he just goes back into his room. And it is like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would be frustrating.
Yeah, that is frustrating. I mean, imagine like you're at your at the base with your friends and nobody can hear or see you.
Yeah,
that is frustrating. We go back to the lab. Rathman is staring into the skull, which Carter is very alarmed about, and she's like, "Stop doing that. That's how Daniel disappeared." But he's like, "Yeah, there's no residual radiation. It's a paperweight," he calls it, which frustrates Carter, because of course she doesn't want to give up on her friend. So she's like, okay, fine, I'll take over. And
I think I think there was a line earlier, but it might be in this scene, I can't remember. And it's where I just forgot his name, scientist guy,
Rathman.
Thank you, Rathman. He's sitting there with Siler, and he looks to Siler and he goes, "I don't know. What do you think?" And Siler says, "I think you're going to get fired."
Yes, that is actually here. I didn't note it down, but okay. Yes, this is exactly when this happened. Yeah, it wasn't super important, but it was an interesting line. I love that too. Yes, he will probably get fired. Yes. This is also where Daniel notices that he's neither hungry nor thirsty. I think Carter is kind of tired and frustrated, and she drinks a glass of water, and Daniel notices that he's neither hungry nor thirsty. I have so many million questions, like, how is that even possible with what we know? But okay, plot.
Yeah, whatever.
It's,
I mean, there's so much that we just have
yes, implication accept. Being maybe, and that's what Daniel thinks, maybe he's dead, maybe he wasn't transported, he's just dead, right? What makes sense?
Yeah. You know, in the Next Generation episode where they end up getting phase shifted.
Yes.
Well, in that case, it's Ensign Ro and Geordi LaForge.
Yes.
And they're talking with each other, and Ro says, "Well, maybe we're dead."
Yeah.
There's so many parallels to what they're doing here with that episode.
Yeah. Yeah, there's tons of parallels here. Carter does feel something with Daniel in the room. So that's interesting. She's like, something. We go back quickly to the control room. They're sending an UAV, not super important, nothing really helpful comes out of that. Carter reports back to Hammond, basically nothing. She's like, there's nothing, just nothing. But then she has an idea. Maybe Daniel's grandfather can help, because, I mean, he had an experience with a crystal skull, so maybe? Slight problem. I think Fraser mentions that he's like, yeah, he's at a psychiatric institution right now. But good news, I already talked to them, and visitors are always welcome. So they're like, Maybe we should go, and Hammond is like, okay. But okay,
yeah, make sure, go talk to crazy grandpa.
Yeah, but make sure you don't mention anything classified, because SGC is dull and has to remain classified. Oh, Dad.
And they're like, okay, Dad, sure.
Yeah, okay. So we go to the aforementioned institution.
And luckily, plot physics work to allow Daniel to get on the airplane that they presumably all got on.
We get the little scene that I still don't understand. The team is there and waiting, and we see some patients, and then the nurse comes and asks who they are, and then she's like, oh, I'll check with Nicholas, and Daniel realizes he doesn't even have to wait for her, and he just follows her into Nicholas's room.
That whole scene, I assumed, was just for the joke.
Maybe. Yeah, could be, but it's also filler.
Yeah, but we do get the funny joke with, do you know him?
Oh,
and everyone says yes, and Teal'c says no. And they look at Teal'c, and he goes, yes.
Yeah, intimately. Yes. Yeah, that's true. Maybe Jack's for like, that. Yeah, maybe for that. That's true. They're sitting in a room with it. Oh, Nicholas is sitting in a room with a doctor, and he mentions that I miss him, implication being Daniel. And in the scene already, I was like, kind of looks like Nicholas can see Daniel. And Daniel asks him to, he says, oh, there's friends coming in, and just tell them everything. And then Nicholas goes into this whole complaint of, oh, Daniel threw away his career with his insane belief that the pyramids were built by aliens, which Daniel is like, well, I was right.
And you haven't published a paper in 2 years, or he hasn't published a paper in two years.
So he basically threw away his career, and he was kind of like me, like they both did the same stupid thing, and Jack asks them about what happened, and first he's like, there were no aliens, and I think even Jack says something about, oh, maybe like you two agreed or whatever, and Daniel's like, no, he didn't, he wanted to, he did listen, in the end he did not believe in my theories of the skull, just as I did not believe in his theories of the pyramids and the aliens. So turns out they were both pretty stubborn, they were had both crazy ideas, and they were both right.
Friends in the family.
Yeah. So Jack is like, okay, I want to know what happened. And Nick is like, I want to see the skull you found, because I think Jack told him about that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Told him they had a skull, didn't say where they got it.
Yes. It's like, I can't say. So, yeah.
You want info? Show me the skull.
Yeah. So we go to Hammond's office. Very important thing that happens here. So Hammond and Jack are there, and I think Jack is trying to convince Hammond to let Nick see the skull, and Hammond has a good point. He's like, Carl, there's no greater secret in this nation than the Stargate. And O'Neill's like, so we keep him away from level 28. but he has a good point at the end. He's like, I mean, he's in a mental health institution. Like, who's going to believe him?
That's true. Yeah Jack says that too.
Yeah.
He can say anything. Who will believe him?
So Hammond is like, okay, I guess we can do that. Just keep in line. And then Jack walks out, and Daniel's about to leave, and Hammond gets a call, and it's from his granddaughter. And she asks him, like, oh, like, will you come to my, what was it, piano recital or something?
Yeah, her play or recital.
Something like that. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, sorry, honey, I can't. A very close friend of mine is lost and he needs my help. And she does understand. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, but okay, that like you should take care of your friend.
So I really like this whole thing because we get to see Hammond in a different light.
Yeah, the family Hammond, Grandpa Hammond, Grandpa George. Right?
And I bet he's a really good
grandpa. I think so, too. I have a feeling just from this little scene, he's a really good grandpa. He probably goes to most things, but every now and then he can't. Yeah. So we go back to the lab, and apparently, well, and Nicholas is there, and he touches a skull, and they're like, "Oh, don't touch it," and he's like, "Yeah, it's fine," and then he points out something. He's like, "I think he knows where it is from," because he's like, "The skull stood on a stone pedestal," and they're like, "What?"
And he's like, "You've been there."
Yeah, and he's like, and they're like, was that somewhere on Earth?" And he's like, no, that was the ruins of the temple where I found the skull." No, they say, "Oh, was that the temple on Earth?" And he's like, no, that was the ruins of the temple where I found the skull, but it's all gone, collapsed. I'm talking about the cavern." And Tilk's like, "Do you know the location of the cavern?" And Nick, and I don't know how he knows that, but he's like, "Oh, this is nowhere on Earth. It was so enormous that the light of my torch, and he's British, he uses the word torch, never reached the bottom."
Mm-hmm.
Also interesting that his uncle is, or his grandfather is British, but okay. And then he mentions,
or Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Or, okay, that could, that's true. He is actually Canadian. And then he mentions, there was a field of energy that surrounded him, and then he was in that cavern. And then he says, and then the giants came, the giant aliens. And they spoke.
Jack's kind of going, at that point, like, eye rolling.
Yeah. And then he's like, and then they spoke, Uya Walingwa Lingwe Tayil, I think. I have it here written down, but I don't remember.
Yeah, and Daniel says it at the same time with him.
With Rossman, actually. Rossman starts to translate, and Daniel basically says as well, "The enemy of an enemy is my friend." Then he's like, "Yes, but what does it mean?" And Nicola says, "Well," and then, I mean, I was scared, and I closed my eyes, and it didn't answer, and then all of a sudden I was back in Belize, and the temple was collapsing. There was like the earth was shaking, and he climbed out, and it just disappeared. And he's like, "Can you imagine what it feels like to go on the most incredible journey of your life and have no one believe you?" And I think everybody's kind of nodding.
They're like,
"Be there?"
No.
Yeah. By the way, Rothman still has nothing. Still useless.
Yeah. Still having a problem with the way they portray Rothman, but I get it for the episode, but whatever.
And I mean, it is a pretty difficult task, right? There's not a lot to work with, apparently. Mm-hmm. In the hallway, Carter and Jack are talking. It's not super important what they talk about. It's basically just repeating what they just heard, and there might be more to it. That's basically it. But there's one thing that Carter mentions. She's like, "Do you get the feeling that Daniel's still around?" Hint, hint.
Yeah.
Daniel's standing right next to them. Just say.
Right, yeah. And Jack agrees.
Yeah.
And then makes a joke out of it.
Yes, of course. So now we get a really important scene. I really like this one. So.
Yeah, this is like the big reveal.
The big reveal. I mean, it's that there were hints already, but now it's clear. Now
so it gets obvious.
So, Teal'c brings Nick to his quarters. And says, like, "Oh, there will be a guard in front of the door if you need something or whatever." And then walks out. And Daniel's in there. I don't know how he got in there, but I guess he walked just with them.
Hey, he can walk through walls.
Oh, that's true. He could walk through walls if he wanted to. So, yeah, but now he's leaning against the wall. So he walks through the wall, and now he's leaning against it.
Yeah, how convenient.
Never mind. He must be not in the room yet, or at least Nicholas can't see him, because he says, "When you see Daniel, would you tell him I..." And he says, "Well, never mind. It's something I should tell him myself." And then Tilk walks out, and then Daniel is in there. So somewhere in between, I guess he walked in or Nicholas noticed him. Who knows? He's just in there.
Yeah, he's just there.
And Nicholas like talks, and he's like, "I'm sorry. For not adopting you when your parents died. I'm sorry for allowing my obsession to drive me to madness." And I think Daniel says there's a conversation happening all of a sudden. It's like,
right.
Like, I was like, you were, Daniel's like, "Oh, it's not so bad." And it's like, "No, you were 8. Like, it wasn't your fault.
I like how they did the conversation because it could be he's just pausing and continuing his thoughts.
Yeah, but it feels like a conversation between them.
Then when he says, no, you were only eight.
Yeah.
Then it's like, wait. That's
no, clearly... actually, when he says you were only eight, kind of hinted at it, but then he says, I'm sorry for allowing my obsession to drive me to madness. He looks directly at Daniel.
And
that is the point where Daniel is like, wait, you can see me? And Nicholas is like, yes, but I think I'm imagining you. Like, I've had hallucinations in the past, so like, you're not real. And Daniel's like, yeah, but I am.
And he goes, that's exactly what a hallucination would tell me.
Exactly. But somehow he convinces Nicholas that it is real. And that we should talk to Hammond immediately.
Yeah, he explains to him the whole thing about he looked into the skull and then...
Basically that.
He finally believes him.
Yeah, so he goes to the exposition room because that's where we have to go now. And he gets escorted in by a guard, and the guard tells Hammond that Nicholas needed to see him immediately. And of course, she followed that order from Nicholas for some reason. So Nicholas explains that, well, Daniel is standing right beside him. And O'Neill is like, he's lost a few pounds. And Daniel's like, Jack, don't be an ass. And Nick repeats that. And Jack is like, what?
Another great moment in the episode.
Yes, I love that one. It turns out that Daniel told Nick about SG-1 and the Stargate and everything. He also believes that they have to let the process finish. They interrupted the process. And that's why it never finishes. And Daniel's
Hammond's
like,
still not buying it, though.
Hammond is not buying it. And so Daniel's like, well, remember, I heard something. And says, okay, tell General Hammond if we go back right now, he might be able to see his granddaughter's school play after all. So it was a school play. And that convinces Hammond and also Jack. Because Hammond is like, that was a private conversation. There was nobody here. So maybe he is there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so with that, okay, let's go, right? So we get a little hallway, gate room, walk and talk. Jack is like, so it wasn't the skull alone that did this, it was the connection to the cavern. And I think Nicholas says something about, it's just a representation of humanity. It really isn't the skull. But he also tells Jack that Daniel said that he should join them. Which, of course, was a lie.
Right.
He just wanted to go.
And Daniel calls him out on it, but he's like, whatever.
Exactly. Nobody can hear you. And then Nick is like, so this is what you've been doing for the past 4 years. Going places.
And they do have a nice little exchange right here where they talk about how Daniel needs to tell him mm-hmm. all about what he's been doing.
Yeah,
and like, Daniel's when we get back, we're doing it.
And just like, okay, we're doing it right when we get back. And I think Daniel's excited because he can share it with his grandfather. I think that everybody would be excited to share something that they really love doing with like his grandfather, right? Well, turns out, that's not what's going to happen. So we go to the planet, and Nicholas is like, we go to the cavern, and he's like, wow, it's just as I remember it. This is where they live. So they walk to the pedestal, and Nicholas puts the skull on it, and Daniel is the one who looks into the skull's eyes, I think, to finish the transformation. Mm-hmm. And we see the field that gets created again, the radiation levels are climbing, but this time Jack is like, okay. And Jack says Daniel said to let it happen, so they let it happen. And all of a sudden, it finishes, and they can see Daniel.
But then Teal's like, where's everyone?
Yeah. So it turns out he was not teleported. So he calls Hammond to tell him that. And Hammond says, well, maybe you should just return to base. I mean, the radiation probably still not good. So go back. And then we get the giants coming. And we get, and this is my favorite thing. Jack says, holy smoke, Bullwinkle. hello, what's your name?
It's almost like they took just a handful of dice with random words on them, rolled them out, and that's what they had Jack say.
Oh, I'm kind of wondering if this wasn't improvised.
Oh, it may well have been, actually. Now that you say it, I'm thinking that probably
and surprisingly, exactly what happened. Surprisingly, the alien even answers. It says, it's Quetzalcoatl, I think?
Quetzalcoatl.
Quetzalcoatl, okay. And it says, Uya, Waling, Waling, Weitayu. And I have, there's a note attached to that, so I have a little bit about this Aztec god, because it is Quetzalcoatl. Is the
Quetzalcoatl.
Quetzalcoatl.
Every time you need it said, you just let me know.
I'll let you know. Okay.
And I'll give you a sign. You.
So it's the god of of wind, air, and learning. Also funny combination. He's also an important deity in a number of other Mesoamerican cultures, including the Mayans and the Incas. Though he was most prominently worshipped by the Aztecs, of course. The Aztecs believed that mankind was created by
Quetzalcoatl.
Yes. And that he controlled the elements of air and wind and gave mankind the gifts of calendars and books, and that he taught their ancestors how to harvest maize, so corn. And unlike most other Aztec gods, there seems to be little evidence to indicate that humans were sacrificed to the guy.
Quetzalcoatl.
Yes. While it was common practice to sacrifice children and young virgin girls to other Aztec gods in order to appease them. So a little history lesson about a very real Aztec god. Back to our story. We're almost done with it. So they figure out is like, so they're like wondering, okay, what does it mean? Like, why are they saying like your enemy of an enemy is my friend? And they're like, it didn't affect Teal'c. Why? They're like,
because he has Junior.
He has Junior. So maybe their enemies are the Goa'uld. So Daniel steps out and he's like, we are enemies of the Goa'uld, to which the alien in English now responds, then you are welcome here.
So what I would have loved to have had happen here, because Daniel magically knows every language he needs to know in the moment.
Yeah, of course.
To have him respond in
ancient Aztec whatever. Or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
And but no, English, no. And then the alien suddenly like, oh, yo, English. Homies in English.
Yo, homies, we know English. Yeah, I mean, they had a couple decades to learn it, I guess. Daniel explains to them, like, we're travelers, we come in search of friendship, we like to exchange our knowledge and culture. And the giant alien says, we accept your proposition. And then points to Nick and says, you may remain. And Nick is, of course, surprised. He's like, me? And Daniel's also like, him? It's like the crazy guy. And the alien is like, this is not the first time you've journeyed here. And that surprises Nick. He's like, oh, you remember. I mean, it's been a while since 1974.
And he doesn't look the same, presumably.
Ish. I mean, given how old he is, he was probably also already quite old. So Nick turns to Daniel and to...
I was going to say Quetzalcoatl just to screw you up.
Yeah, could be. So he's like, I am the right person. This was my life's work. I've been hoping for another chance at this for 29 years. Please. And they agree. They're like, okay. I mean, if the giant alien wants it, then we cannot argue with it. The alien tells Jack to look again into the eyes of the skull. So I guess to transform back. And we get a really nice scene. We see the rest of our team step away. I mean, it's only Carter and Jack. Step away towards the skull, but they don't look into it yet, I guess. Or I don't know. It's not shown. And Daniel's like, well, Nick, take notes. And no, actually, Jack says it. Jack says, well, Nick, take notes. because of course he wants to know what they learn. And Daniel this time says, well, you have to tell me everything, right? Mirroring what Nick basically asked him earlier before they went to the gate. And Nick says, I promise. And then he places his hands on Daniel's shoulders. And we get a really nice scene because he says, Daniel, I'm proud of you. Given what how it started between the two, like in the institution where he was like, he was angry with him almost. And it's like, oh, you threw away your life and all of that. That is a pretty nice turn. And Daniel takes it really nicely because he says, goodbye. And then he smiles and then he says, Grandpa. And that is the end. And we don't get them transforming back or anything that I don't think we need that. It's like, this is the end.
Yeah. And well, and considering this is the end of that whole story.
It is.
This is perfectly fine place to wrap this, this bottle episode up.
Yes. Well, kind of, yeah. It's kind of a bottle, not really.
How about if I call it a self-contained episode?
A cave episode.
A cave episode. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. So that's it. Like it's. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Like, what did you detect? What did you like about it? What did you not like about it? What intrigued you?
Well, going into the episode, I was really worried. And I actually enjoyed the episode more than I thought I would. The whole story itself. I mean, this is a very pretty straightforward, simple story.
Yeah, it is.
And I feel like what could be the really deep, deep, interesting part of the story is the whole relationship between Daniel and Nick.
Yeah.
And it would have been nice to see more of that in this episode, I get that that isn't really the core part of what they're doing with this, although it kind of should have been, I think. But, I mean, like I said, I enjoyed the episode more than I thought it would. I mean, the humor that they put into this one worked so well.
Yeah,
I did like seeing the relationship between Daniel and Nick.
Yeah,
and I mean it was a fun story.
It was. It definitely was.
I feel like I just watched one of the best episodes of Stargate SG-1.
No,
I just watched a fun episode.
A really fun and good episode. Yeah, I agree. Did you detect any like morals or meanings or messages in this one?
Excuse me, kind of, but what I was picking up out of this was it can be difficult for the people who are the visionaries and have ideas that that other people don't accept, and so we got a taste of the isolation, the loneliness that Daniel has probably felt his whole life.
Yes.
By seeing Nick. So that.
Yeah.
And.
I
thought that was interesting.
I'm with you. For me, that is the core. It's like the. I mean, I really like the. And I've been thinking recently even about this one, the crazy ones, the 90s, late 90s, 98 or whatever, Apple advertisement. The crazy ones.
Right. Yeah.
I kind of thought about that. Like the people, I mean, people like they vilify people, they dismiss them, they make fun of them, they send them to mental health institutions in some cases. I mean, and still those are the people who literally do change the world, even if you don't know about it in this case. And one of them is never seen again, but it's a separate story. But
not only never seen, but I'm going to go out on a limb and predict.
Yeah.
Nick's name is never brought up.
Never mentioned. Never.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm not surprised at all.
We might get surprised and it is mentioned, but as far as I'm aware of, it was never mentioned ever again. The whole thing, the aliens, the planet, Nick never mentioned again. No, but it's like that is exactly it. I mean, as you said, like and it's also There's two other interesting things here. One is the parallels between Nick's story and Daniel's story. Both had crazy ideas. Both were laughed at and basically thrown out of their respective communities. Both struggled with that. Daniel was lucky that it happened at the right time, and Stargate had already basically happened, and actually it had happened also during Nicholas' times, but maybe he was too crazy or wasn't close enough to the Stargate program that someone was like, oh, maybe we should do it, we should do something about it. But Daniel's luck was that basically his theories happened to coincide with the Stargate program being revived or basically being like more or less active. Versus Nix, who was so early that there was nothing, or nothing active at least at that point. I mean, as far as I know, the gate was in like mothballed at that point. So I think that's the parallel, but it's also, yeah, it just shows like that the Daniel story could have very easily been exactly Nix, and he ends up in a mental health institution. If he obsesses about his theories, which he apparently did, it's possible that he would have ended up in the same place. The other part is also, sometimes people are too similar. And if they're not aware of that and can step out of their shells and their shadows and their obsessions, they end up alienating each other, despite the fact that they should be best friends. Because they're so similar. And you, like, I think a lot of people have that experience. Like, if you're too similar with like a family member, sometimes that doesn't end well.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah. So I think that's the other part here. And that's for that reason, I really liked, like, I found it. I remember watching this and I found the episode super intriguing. The whole crystal skull teleportation, trans whatever formation that Daniel had, and then different planets and alien races that are giants and have probably a lot of power. They can build crazy things and all of that. I mean, we don't learn a lot about them, but what the little we see, we're like, and they're willing to share with us. I mean, it's a pity that we never did anything with that,
right? And we know that they're enemies of the Goa'uld.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, which also means they've been around this at the same time-ish, at least to some extent.
Yeah. So we have this really intriguing setup for future stories.
Yeah.
And honestly, when the episode ended, right after Daniel goes, Grandpa, and we cut to credits, I'm like, so frustrated because I wanted more.
Yeah.
But I just had that gut feeling like, and that's it. Mm. We will never hear anything about any of this ever again.
Yeah.
In and the rest of the series.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. So I still think it is a really fun ride. It is a really interesting, fun
it's
episode.
A fun ride.
The whole quips with the team and Jack and the Tilk and all of that, and the implications. I mean, that's the other thing I thought about, is like, what if that happened to you? You get teleported-ish or whatever happens, you get face shifted, and now all of a sudden nobody can hear or see you. What do you do?
That would be very disconcerting. It would also be very confusing because I'm trying to figure out why physics works in some situations and not others.
Yeah, and why I'm not hungry.
why I'm not hungry. Why can I lean up against the wall that I just walked through?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it makes no sense. Yeah, so as I said, that's also interesting. So I think we have to come to the final all-important question. How many chevrons would you give that episode?
This is a very easy 6 for me.
Okay.
And I feel like I'm supposed to rate it higher, but this one was just a nice middle of the road, solid, fun episode.
Yeah.
Nothing big.
Yeah.
It's an easy 6.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm also with you. I think because we know the IMDb rating, it feels like we should rate it higher. And I haven't read any of the comments like why people thought it was better than or was higher rated, at least for them, than what we think. But I'm with you. It's a six. It's like that this time, not even a doubt. It's a six. It's a solid six. It's not less. It's not more. It's exactly what's on the tin. It's exactly what's on the what you see in the crystal skull's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
There's like you look yeah. into that, and there's a six in there.
And I was pleasantly surprised by the episode.
Yes,
it's like I said, I went into this one very worried. I was about to watch a crappy episode.
Yeah, and you predicted it pretty well, I have to say. Both parts you got right.
It's well, there you go. It's I want to like brag about how savvy I am, but with the title, it just. It felt like that's exactly what it had to be. And
it was
else.
Not a complicated title. It was like, okay, it's like you know exactly what you're getting, and you got exactly that. It's not an intriguing one. So that brings me, speaking of titles, to the next episode.
Okay.
So this is, of course, the 22nd episode of the third season of Stargate SG-1.
This is our season end cliffhanger?
Exactly. It is part one of a two-part season and beginning cliffhanger episode. And I'll tell you, writing credits, Robert C. Cooper, directed by Martin Wood. So we have a pretty good duo again.
Mm-hmm.
And the title is, both in German and in English, it is Nemesis.
Oh, interesting. So no spoilers. From Germany this time.
Nope, Nemesis. Not this time. Nemesis. Maybe the spoiler people were on vacation because it was May or something. I don't know. They're like, we're out.
That could be.
We're out.
Yeah.
Let the intern do it. And the intern was like, why should I work? Like, just keep the name. Call it Nemesis. Nemesis Part 1, it's called it in German. Teil 1, Part 1 in German. But that's
okay.
It.
Well, okay, so we know it's going to be a cliffhanger. That's not even a prediction. Mm-hmm. That we just know that that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So with a name like Nemesis, that means we're going to have a major threat. Like this is another world-ending threat. We kind of have a track record here. So, all right. So, this will be a Gould threat. We've had some setup with Apophis getting incredibly powerful. So, Apophis has some new diabolical way of completely destroying humanity. And so, that's what our team has to deal with. Now, when we get to the cliffhanger part, and this isn't even fair as a prediction, it's going to look like they have lost, just like we have in every cliffhanger end of season, and then they'll find some amazing way to turn it around. I will add into this prediction that because the threat is so great that we're going to see a team up with SG-1 and other partner species aliens that they have dealt with. So that could mean the Toker get involved and the Asgard. I think we'll see both of those. How is that for a fun prediction?
Since I know what happens this episode, it is really funny.
Oh wow, I'm that far off.
I'm not telling you. I'm telling you, you will have a massive surprise when you watch this episode. I can predict that much because I yes. That's all I'm saying. There is a massive surprise in this episode. One that you will not see coming. You clearly did not see coming.
Okay, well, that's awesome. Yeah. I am so up for being surprised and delighted by the surprises.
Yeah.
Or completely
8.7 is the IMDb rating, just so that you know what to look forward to. Yes, I think that's all I will tell you. I could tell you one more thing, but I think I will not, because I don't want to even hint at surprising you, at spoiling the surprise.
Okay, perfect. So I'll keep that.
You will be massively surprised once you watch this episode.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. The rest I will tell you after that one, because I don't want to spoil it.
So now you have me wondering, does it turn out that some character we've interacted with all along is like a Gould or a Gould agent, or who knows? I that's not a prediction. It's just like, now you have me wondering what's well, going to come down with this.
I think it's going to be
big and bad, whatever it is.
I think I can make a prediction myself.
Okay.
I have a feeling you're going to watch this episode tonight.
I'm looking at the calendar, and I think it's very likely. I mean, I was probably going to watch it anyhow, but after the setup you've given me, I'm kind of going to have to know.
Yes. Actually, I might too, because this is an episode I have been looking forward to for basically all season.
Well, and you've been doing a great job of not hinting, leading me on. It's, where do you find the self-control? I mean, I am genuinely impressed.
I have a good poker face, I guess.
You do. Well, we will have to come back to this after I watch the episode.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Because I will probably have a newfound respect for your poker face.
I guess so, yes. Yeah, and speaking of end of the season, after the season, we will take the usual break. So there will be the cliffhanger will linger on for a little while. We'll have a couple episodes, I don't know how many yet, but 3 probably minimum, where we like let things fester and simmer and then see how it gets resolved. So
fester. We let them fester.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So, with that, let's close up this episode. We've been talking way more than we needed to about this episode.
I thought we were going to get through this one faster.
Yes.
I should know better than that.
You should definitely know better than that. We always need twice the time than what the runtime was. So I would say, I think the important part is now that people figure out or I ask you and you tell people where they can find more of your awesome content, just in case they haven't heard of you and they want to know more.
Oh, well, they can go find more of me on various social media platforms as Jay Gamut, and most active right now on Mastodon and Blue Sky and PixelFed. Then I'll toss out a couple shows, other podcasts, just for fun. The Context Machine with Brian Chaffin and Mac Voices Live with Chuck Joyner.
Very cool.
There's others, but that's enough for now.
Both very, very good podcasts, I have to say. I love both of them.
Well, thank you. They're fun.
Yeah, they're very, very fun, especially when Brian teases you or makes fun of you.
Yeah.
You have to listen to that.
He does a pretty good job of taking it when I dish it out too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so me you can find also with you on the British Tech Network Thursdays and Fridays, Big Show and Mac Show, at least most weeks unless I'm traveling. You can also find out more about me on my website, thepatrice.com, takes you there. That's where you find all the podcast projects, social media links, and just anything that is interesting. There's a blog with links and all of that. And more importantly, since we're ending the season next episode on a cliffhanger, I'm open for suggestions still. Actually, by the time you hear this, it's probably gonna be too late. I was just thinking maybe people could send it. No, actually, never mind. Just do it for next time. If you have suggestions for things that Jeff has not seen, or you think Jeff has not seen, it would be actually interesting to see what do people think you haven't seen. If you have suggestions,
I would find that very interesting.
Suggestions for shows that we should watch at least an episode from. Either a particular episode or the pilot. Usually pilot is a good start to see what could happen. Then send it to us. And you can do so on our social medias. We have Mastodon, It's retrorewatch at techhangout.social or Blue Sky, that is at retrorewatch.com, or good old email still works, hello@retrorewatch.com. We'll send the email to both of us, so just in case. Also, we're taking your comments, we're taking your questions if you have some. If you have comments about episodes, things we missed, or things you're interested in our opinion on, hey, send us an email or social media message, post, whatever. We'll do that. And with that, let's look into the eyes of the crystal skull again so that we can go back to our reality. Thanks for listening.